Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to speak with us about the very special t-shirt that we have for the 15th annual Bridge Walk. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Jen.
Hey. So today is the last day to register for the walk in order to get a t-shirt.
That's right. Imagine it's coming up on us so fast. I can't believe that it was a 15-week campaign and we're almost close to the end of it.
And we're getting towards the end. And the reason the deadline for the registration in terms of t-shirts has to be this far ahead, of course, is that they have to get ordered and printed and picked up and all those sorts of things. So although folks could register to be with us later, they won't be able to get a t-shirt. So today is a really important day in that 15-week campaign. And given that, we thought it would be really fun. I'm sorry, was there more about that?
No, I was just going to introduce the same thing you were going to introduce, which is one of my most fun things, is the countdown to the t-shirt deadline.
Yes. And it's one of those places where it's one of the great gifts that Ashwini brings to the Sangha is the ability to really put those things together for us. And so we thought it would be fun if you might walk us through the different elements of the design. The design is beautiful. Every year we have a great t-shirt, and I'm actually quite excited about this one this year. And in particular, kind of the significance of the elements of the shirt that for folks who have been following the campaign, you've heard a little bit about that over the last 5 days. But we thought it would be fun to just elaborate a little more on that and look at, where did those different pieces of the t-shirt design come from in terms of the significance of celebrating this big year?
Well, the first piece of it is the ruby anniversary of the Bridge Walk, and we really so badly this year wanted to get a ruby red t-shirt, but we tried. Oh my God, hats off to Sridevi, who's been working so hard on getting us t-shirts, but based on price and on availability and stock and all of those things, we just couldn't do a ruby t-shirt. But then, black is such a color for Zen. So it's joy in Japan. So that's great. So it's a celebratory event, and so black t-shirt. But here were the elements, Jen, and this was really based on the theme for the year, which is Anjali, empty your teacup, which we so tried to incorporate into the theme of the campaign. And so the first element that we started off on day one of the design was the lotus. And this comes from the famous flower sermon where the Buddha is supposed to have held up this lotus flower and one of his disciples saw it and smiled. And that was that silent transmission of wordless wisdom, right? The place that we look at, which is direct experience that cannot be communicated by words. And what it signifies is that the jewel is in the lotus, and it's in everything, right? The essence, the suchness of all that is the expression of life in all of its forms. And so that was what the lotus symbolized. And the lotus is on a teacup that is empty. And the symbolism of that is, of course, the theme of the year. When we empty our teacup, what we offer is what life offers. And what life offers is the suchness, which is the essence or the jewel in the lotus, right? We're sparkling gems of conscious, compassionate awareness when we drop the conversation, when we empty the teacup of opinions and preferences and all of those conditioned whatsoevers that cloud the sparkling clarity of life. And so that was the jewel in the teacup is what an empty teacup is. That's the experience we have. And it also mentions the front of the t-shirt has the empty teacup with the lotus, and it mentions this is the empty teacup challenge. And the challenge that we're going for is 15,000 moments of conscious, compassionate awareness. And so 15,000 instances across the Sangha of emptying the teacup. And the significance of that is that what we do is a practice. It's one thing to have an intellectual understanding that the jewel is in the lotus and that you have to empty your teacup, but to practice it is what makes this practice, what makes this such so tangible for all of us, which results in the transformation. And so part of that is acknowledging the fact that we as Sangha, every year around the Bridge Walk, and as we practice, keep a set of practice commitments. And that's what awareness that's what being an awareness practitioner is. It's to do practice. And the practice that we've been doing for 15 weeks is to collectively empty the teacup so that we can celebrate 15,000 moments of conscious, compassionate awareness.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what strikes me as you're saying that is Sherry's said on a number of shows recently, and she feels certain we're going to, you know, blow that out of the water, which I'm right with her. Of course we will. And what I was just realizing as you said that is that's extraordinary to take in. 15,000 moments of conscious, compassionate awareness, and we're all positive. There's no problem. We're going to reach that and go blow right past it. And to realize what a force of good that is to have that many moments of conscious, compassionate awareness happening in the world.
Yeah. Yes, those many sparkling gems of conscious compassion. I mean, those are all those empty teacup moments, right? It's just extraordinary.
Yeah.
When the veil parts and life's goodness and love and compassion and joy are what's present.
And the other thing that strikes me about that is that the project in Cantalomba is such a perfect, beautiful, tangible example of that, where Jerry Huber as our guide is such a great example of we can project. The teacup is always empty. And so when life steps forward, in this case in the form of a fellow meditator in Assisi, Italy, to say, hey, would you like to come to Zambia? The teacup's empty. And so there's all the space in the world for just a giant, sure, yes. And not having any idea what will come of that. You know, never filling up the teacup, always keeping it empty, and then just day by day, year by year, the project grows to what it is today.
Yes, and that inspiration is what's reflected in every single person who says yes and allows the generosity and love and goodness and compassion to bubble forth and contribute to that, right?
Yeah.
It's such a lovely, lovely mirroring of something good calls forth that goodness, allows us to contribute that good and increases the goodness.
Yeah, what a great point.
Yeah.
What a great point.
Yeah.
Yes, but each of us, as we learn that skill to be empty, we're just completely full.
Yes,
you know,
completely
life
full.
Fills us so beautifully. Yeah.
Well, and that's the significance if you flip the back of the T-shirt to the black of the T-shirt, because it has Africa as the embodiment of that project. And the words are 15 years, the ruby anniversary of the Bridge Walk, that we've been doing this for 15 years, 15 years of generosity, of abundance, of letting life speak in the form of that project, of all the love, the compassion, the joy that we have in that deep connection, in that relationship, in that Sangha way to the Sangha in Africa. And the ruby is an interesting stone, right? It's unconditional love. It's the color of red. It's the sparkling jewel in the lotus. And it's so much, when we were looking at this, it was so much, if you look at the qualities and characteristics of the ruby, it's sparkling clarity. It's the fire of transformation. And it was so appropriate for that to be Anjali, right? To be the symbol of our practice for this particular year. It all came together like that.
Yeah, so beautiful. And such a time really for everyone to pause. You know, however long you've been on this journey with all of us, to just pause and realize that's quite extraordinary that, you know, 15 years ago, we assembled at Crissy Field for the first Bridge Walk, and just so much that happened. And as you pointed out, so many people who have followed the guide, you know, said yes, joined in participating, because, again, it could never have been done with one person. It's been such an extraordinary Sangha,
journey.
Commitment. People, journey. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and to me, it's that sense of you know, for all the Sangha bead, right? That mm-hmm. we do this mm-hmm. for. The path was there for us when we arrived, and we have uh-huh. a responsibility for what the path is now. And yeah. we do it for the path that will be for all those who will come. And that there's yeah. such a tremendous sense of reverence and the sacred, there's a sense of sacred in holding that tradition, that lineage of being part of something mm-hmm. that continues, mm-hmm. right? And to me, that is such mm-hmm. a beautiful symbol of life, because mm-hmm. it's always there. It's eternal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the last aspect of the T-shirt is that, which is mm-hmm. it, to me, just the beautiful little monk doing mm-hmm. handstands in absolute joy. Because mm-hmm. that's the realization, that's that experience of the joy of intelligence knowing itself, when all of that conditioning is not what we're attending to, and we're here and now. The joy that we experience allows us to do cartwheels.
Yeah.
The juxtaposition of the monk doing joyful cartwheels, right? Mm-hmm. Because first of all, it's cute and it's fun and it's whimsical. It's a nod to the fool and as the highest form of Zen Buddhism, right? That the Hōtai. And so it's whimsical, it's joyful, and it also symbolizes the absolute discipline, the absolute commitment
yes, exactly.
to practice
yes.
that complete centered transcendence of self-will that allows for the joy to bubble forth in that
yes.
that form of expression.
Yes, that the joy comes from presence.
That
yes.
joy comes from presence, from emptiness,
yeah.
from the
from
teacup
empty.
Being empty
yeah.
allows us to realize yeah. the sparkling jewel of the lotus. And
yeah.
so, and then of course it says living compassion, which is what we do. The name of the organization so symbolizes the process.
Yes. Oh, so beautifully, eloquently put. I'm just smiling so hugely as I'm listening to you talk. And just today, every year, for the walk, we update, we have some history posters that we bring that document every year so far in the project, and so we add a new poster each year, and I was just today picking out the photos for it, and seeing the faces of those kids and having that experience that you're talking about, just that incredible joy that's so big that one just has to have that incredible discipline just to twinkle, or you might start shouting or something.
Yeah. The silent cartwheel.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I just keep thinking, it keeps dropping in Ashwini, that it would be so beautiful to have everyone in the Sangha in one of those T-shirts. It just feels like
yes.
the T-shirt this year has an extra significance, an extra, you know, it's beautiful. It has all those elements that you just talked about. And it's a really big milestone for all of us in the Sangha. So I just keep thinking, gosh, it would be extraordinary to have as many people as possibly can hop on there and order a T-shirt, and all of us get to wear them.
You know, I was just asking Sherry about the history of the T-shirt, and it's such a symbol of participation and of belonging. And you know, you sit and you say, "Will you turn and face this way, please?" And every single person in the room is wearing one of the T-shirts at the bridge walk. You can.
Exactly.
It's an extraordinary experience to see the entire room in pantalombas in a bridge walk T-shirt. It's like a badge of belonging. And so yes, then, why
uniform.
Don't we do that? Why don't we just? Yes, it is, isn't it? It is like that monk, right? That when we don don T-shirt
and there is
a certain reverence. It's we're taking our place in. This group of people who is deeply committed to waking up and ending suffering and demonstrating our generosity to this particular project, to being expressions of life, to being Anjali in the world, by supporting concretely a project that we so deeply care about. So yes, why don't we let's do this? Let's send another email out tomorrow, announcing that there's one extra day for the Bridge Walk T-shirt sign up, and that everybody is encouraged to get a T-shirt to have a part of that experience, whether they come to the walk or not.
Mm. I love it. I, you know, good news updates are always moving, and I have tears in my eyes. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That was so beautiful.
Well,
yeah.
We're an extraordinary group of people, and let's get T-shirts to celebrate that.
Exactly. Oh, thank you so much, Ashwini. That was really beautifully put, and I'm excited.
Yeah.
Great. Let's one more day, and let's
email.
All get in a T-shirt.
Yes. Yes, let's do that. Thanks, Jen.
Okay. Thank you, Ashwini. Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry. Sherry, are you there?
Whoopsie. Sorry about that, Michael. Hi. I was muted. I was muted so that I don't know why, because you had me muted. But, you know, as I'm fond of pointing out, I'm kind of a belt and suspenders chick. So,
yes.
So here I am. Thank you, Michael. Wasn't that fun?
Yes, it was great. It was great.
Yeah.
Great wedding.
You know, I wanted to, first of all, let me ask you how you are. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Very good. And I wanted to say something about the T-shirt thing before we go on with other things. You know, sometimes somebody will say to me, oh, you know, I don't do T-shirts. I don't want a T-shirt. I'd rather the money just went to the project, which, you know, I can understand that sentiment. I personally have way more T-shirts than I will wear in this lifetime. But the point of having it is what Ashwini and Jen were talking about. We could take that extra, I don't know what a T-shirt costs, but we could take that extra money and we could put it into the project and it would go wherever it went. But when there's a T-shirt and somebody has that T-shirt and they wear that T-shirt to do whatever it is that they're doing, it's a reminder. You know, it's a tangible thing that we can have in our hands here that reminds us of that work that we do there, of that community, of our family in Cantalomba. And it's not the same as taking an extra 15 or 20 bucks or whatever T-shirts cost and putting it into the program. It's a significance that I find I really can't articulate, but feel is very, very important. So when Jen and Ashwini were talking about extending the deadline and seeing if, you know, as many people as possible can have one of these T-shirts, will choose to have one, it is that, I don't know, it's a feeling of solidarity. I think it's why, you know, when you have a sports team, they don't just all come out in whatever they wear around the house. You know, they do wear something that says this is who we are, this is what we do, and it has a very potent, special meaning, feeling with it. So I just want to put my encouragement also. And if you wear it to do the yard work, that's fine. But if you wear it somewhere and somebody says, What is that? Then you have a chance to say, oh, well, it's this group of people that I'm involved with, and what we do is support a community in a slum in Zambia. And, you know, they might just say, oh, gosh, tell me more about that. And so you say, well, you can go to the website and read about it, and who knows, they may have just really been looking for something like this that they could support and get involved with. So there, we can be a little advertisement for something that touches our hearts and might just touch somebody else's heart too.
Yes, and I'm glad to say that I had exactly that experience this past weekend. I was wearing a recent Bridgewalk T-shirt, and somebody asked me about it, and I got to tell them. So it's great.
Oh, Isn't that fabulous?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Good. Oh, good. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm not just making this up. It really happens in real life.
Yes, and I remember other callers calling into Open Air years ago talking about exactly that experience too.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great way to spread the word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I know you have other things to do, so let me be quiet for just a moment so that you can do those. How about that?
Great. So we have some announcements here.
Mm-hmm.
By popular demand, a second session of Conversations with the Mentor group coaching has been added and will start this Friday, September 23rd. These weekly group sessions, yes. These weekly group sessions offer support and accountability for your recording and listening practice commitment. Registration closes in 2 days on Thursday, so sign up right away.
Oh, good. Isn't that wonderful? There were so many people who wanted to do it that we have to have another session. That is marvelous.
Yes, it is.
All right, what else?
Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up weekly to practice being present. And a new quarter begins October 15th.
All right. Oh, October 15th.
Mm. Yes.
That is
a lot
big date, isn't
happening.
It? A lot of good stuff happens then. Yeah.
And yes, and also on Saturday, October 15th, Sangha members from all over will gather in San Francisco for the 15th annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk to benefit the Africa Vulnerable Children's Project.
Mm-hmm. I've heard something about that.
Yes, I have too. And you don't want to miss this exciting and joy-filled Sangha experience.
Mm-hmm.
And join you, Sherry, for a fun and interactive workshop debunking the extremely popular and age-old myth of too busy, not enough time. This workshop will be held. I'm sorry, I'm too busy. I can't go, Sherry.
You can't go. I'm pretty busy too, but I think I'm going to go anyway. I'm just going to make time and go anyway.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So that will be held on Saturday, October 22nd at the beautiful Namaste Retreat Center in Felton, California in the San Francisco Bay Area. And all proceeds and donations will benefit the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Lovely.
And if that weren't enough, you, Sherry, just a couple more. You, Sherry, will guide participants through a fun and profound email class on communication beginning October 25th.
Yeah, I heard that too.
That was communicated to you also?
That was communicated to me as well, yes.
This class is an opportunity to discover your style of communication and become aware of how the ego orientation muddles connection.
Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, we've been working on this class already, and I do think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be fun and illuminating.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my experience of practice over the years, my communication, you know, has improved immensely as a result of practice. And I think it practice takes away a lot of the charge out of communication, which is just so helpful.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Conscious, compassionate awareness really does improve everything. Just there's not an aspect of life that isn't helped by bringing giant doses of conscious, compassionate awareness to it. And communication, Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So much suffering in it when people are unconscious.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and other practice opportunities, go to livingcompassion.org.
Yeah.
And a reminder that we are on Bamboozle number 9, Illusion of Separation, with the assignment for week 3.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, as many of you have, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is really helpful. Okay, Sherry, I think we are ready to talk with folks.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Jill in Brooklyn.
Hi.
Well, hello. How are you?
Hi. I'm very good. I'm very good. Well, I didn't expect to go on first. but the reason that I made Kesha was I just have some exciting news about. Well, I've been looking for a house in Philadelphia, and I had this really exciting thing happen, and I just want to share it.
Oh, good. tell us.
Yes, yes. So I've looked at like 30 houses, and I put a couple bids on 2 different houses and didn't get the houses. And on Sunday, I went to this open house that I wasn't even planning on going to. And I walked into the house, and it was just like, I just felt like, I feel like the house and I fell in love with each other. Like, it really was, I don't know, it was like a very exciting experience. And I maybe stayed there for 10 minutes and knew, like, this is the house. Like, it was on a street, like, that where the Mother Nature had kind of taken it over back from the city, and like there was like grass coming up through the sidewalk. It was just very, very chill. It was very, very chill part. And I was like completely blown away. So I also have this piece of karma that came up, which is, and there are tons of people at the open house. And so my karma that comes up is like, you know what, I can work with something else. Like if somebody else really wants this, like, I don't need to take this. I can be very happy with something smaller, less exciting, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so that piece of karma came up, and for some reason I didn't listen to the voices that were trying to pitch it, and I just really worked with my broker and was like, let's just go for it as hard as we can, like, you know, wholehearted, 100%, you know, let's try and get this house. And so I heard today that there were 5 bids, and I was one of 2, and that the other bid was actually higher than mine, but the woman was so moved by the letter that I wrote saying about how much I love the house. I'm, like, getting choked up here. and, like, what in sort of what, you know, what I do in my life, that she was really considering going, like, a significant amount less for the house, just to pass it on to me. And so, isn't that unbelievable? I just was blown away. And so, I talked to my broker, and so we figured out a little plan. And yeah, she accepted my bid for the house.
Oh, congratulations!
Thank you. Yeah, it's just like, it's just a very, very moving example for me about how practice works in my life. And like, yeah, it's I'm so excited. I mean, I actually don't even want any furniture. I just want to like lay on the floor in that house.
Well, there's just there's so much practice in that, isn't there?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
We agonize, right? Now, I'm not saying you agonize, but people can do.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, and this and that, and I've got it, and this and that. And then you find, I love this, you find the one that you're just in love with. And the karma comes up to say, well, yeah, but you know, if you don't really, and there's that impulse from the heart that says, may the person whose house this is triumph. Right? The house and the person are trying to find each other. It's the roomy, you know, the water is looking for the thirsty person is looking for the water. They're trying to find one another. The house and the human are trying to find one another. It's a love affair, right? And so to say, no, I'm not going to give up on either the house or the human. I'm going to do the very best I can. And yes, if this isn't the house for this human being, then okay, then I'll be patient and wait for the one that is. But I'm going to give it everything I've got. And beyond that, then we step into this generosity, right? So somebody else loved this house so much that she would rather it went to someone else who would love it the way she does, then she would have more money.
It's so crazy. I mean, it's not crazy. But
it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
It's so how we want to be, isn't it?
Yes. And it just feels like, such a gift to that I got to experience that, and just this like very clear like stepping off of the bridge into the abyss sort of feeling of like, oh wow, like, you know, the house is going to meet me on the other side, you know, that this is not just about my ideas.
Yes, and you know, Jill, we would say, and probably a lot of us would agree, oh, that's really rare that somebody would be like that. But if we consider that you would have never had that experience had you not been open-hearted and vulnerable.
That's true.
You could have stuck with that karma and said, oh, well, you know, maybe somebody else wants it more. She's there. Well, you know, somebody's just going to buy this house, and who knows what's going to happen to it, so I might as well get as much money as I can. But you were open-hearted, and you put that out, and she met you just like the house did.
Yeah, and I have to say, when I was writing that letter, again, conditioning was coming in, and I was just, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning because I had everything happened so quickly. And, you know, it was just like, the letter's too short. Don't use exclamation points, like whatever, all of this stuff. And I actually sent the letter to my real estate agent, and I was like, I don't even know if you can use this, you know, but just, and the fact that life spoke through me in that letter, sort of with, despite the conditioning's efforts, and is like really another great example of like just build so much faith for me in this process and this practice, and I'm eternally grateful that I got to see all of that stuff. Great. And I'd never seen that piece of karma either, that I do that like I'll give, you know, and I think that it can operate from a place of, you know, generosity, and there's probably times when it's not conditioning, but that was clearly conditioning, saying, like, oh, someone else should have that house. Because it went to me.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And finally getting to that place of, no, yes, they can, but only after I have done everything that I can possibly do to live in that house and love it and care for it for the rest of our days.
Yeah. That when the heart speaks, to just put everything behind that. That's what the experience felt like to me. So, anyway, I had talked to you before about this house thing, and so I just wanted to. It just happened today, so I'm like, it's. And I was like, I gotta tell Sherry this.
Well, I'm glad you did, because as you know, I mean, I'm constantly saying, now keep me posted. Now let me know. Tell me how it goes, and people. You know, I don't know. Maybe they either forget or they just assume that I just say that to people. But no, I want to know. I want to know these things.
Yeah.
So it's great. I really appreciate it, and I'm so very happy for both of you.
Thank you. All right. Well, Talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right.
Good night. Thank you, Jill.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jill. That was a fun success story, Sherry. Great to celebrate.
Oh, yeah. Talk about heart opening, huh?
Yes, great. Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaching program, and then we'll be back to talk to more callers.
All right.
The practice theme for this year is Anjali, emptying your teacup. As the Zen story teaches, when we're full of ego's preferences, opinions, likes and dislikes, there is no room for the guidance and clarity of awareness. Through weekly coaching, regular commitments, and the practice of recording and listening, we train to empty our teacup and be open to life. Zen awareness coaches are trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching about life issues and awareness practice in general. We hear from new folks and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the support they need to deepen their practice. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees, getting a coach assists in supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, go to livingcompassion.org, click on the pink lotus, then Programs to find Zen Awareness Coaches. Make 2016 the year of emptying your teacup and having the life your heart desires.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Heather from Oregon.
Well, hello, Heather. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call today.
Pleasure. What's going on?
So I'm calling. I had called in a few months ago and was having some content come up around moving. And anyways, I ended up in Oregon, and I'm here, and I thank you for your support with that call. But now I am facing some new and old content, and it's about relationships. And I'm actually feeling pretty good right now in the moment. I've been recording and listening all day, which has been super helpful. But I just get to this place, and I've looked at this over and over and over again in practice, but I keep getting to the same place of getting hooked by conditioning and seeing the same process. And I'm just not kind of sure what to do differently or how to use practice differently to see an opening or to do something different when I find myself in this same place.
Uh-huh. Do you feel comfortable saying a little bit about the details of it?
Sure, yeah. thank you. I get to a place where I am starting out in a new relationship, and I'm feeling really confident and, you know, focusing on myself and doing all of the things in my life that I love doing, running, working, and after a few weeks or a month or you know, not super long of dating, I get to a place where I completely am crushed if I don't hear from the person I'm dating. Or, I mean, I can just see the shift in energy. It's so obvious to me. I go into the stories of, you know, self-hate and self-doubt, and the voices just, they hook me so, so bad that, I mean, it's ugly. It just gets so ugly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then on the other piece of that is having the awareness practice and knowing what's possible, but not, like, knowing what's possible if I use the tools and if I, you know, practice the practice, and just not kind of being able to get myself out of it. And then eventually when I do hear from the person or the new relationship, it's like, oh, okay, I'm all better. And I don't want to live my life like that. I'm so sick of it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And, okay, so it's we really wish that there were a 12-step program, right? Because that's the level of difficulty in a situation like this. You with me?
Kind of.
Well, it's an addiction.
Okay.
And the addiction, we should start one. The addiction is to the voices.
Okay.
Can you see that?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, I do, it's almost like I can, I mean, that it's almost like if I feel like if I'm not pining and aching and hating myself and listening to the voices, that it means I don't care about the relationship or the potential relationship or this person or...
Which technically, Heather, which actually you don't.
Okay.
Because your relationship is with that conditioning.
Right.
There's no room, actually, for anyone else. Anyone else is just an excuse to start all of that up, to feed that karma, to get that addiction ramped up. The story, the story is that it's about the other person. But you know it's not, because as you say, this is not the first time it happened.
Right, and I can...
It's a regular process, right?
Right. But it's only with relationships, and that makes me so mad.
Yes. And here's the thing about that. If we were in a room together on retreat, I would ask questions like, so does anybody else have this going on? And we would see how many people raise their hand. And then we could say, and how many people have that same thing going about food? And we would see those people. How many people have that going about money? People would raise their hand. How many have that going on about health? And people would raise their hand. Because that kind of obsessive process is how karma, how the ego maintains itself. It's actually not. It has nothing to do with relationship. It has to do with the fact that you will buy into a conversation, an obsessive conversation about relationship. Because there's a karmic belief that if you're not neurotic, whacked out, and crazy, it means you don't care.
Right.
Now, when you step back from that, you know that loving somebody has nothing to do with being neurotic, whacked out, and crazy. That's not love. That's neurotic, whacked out, and crazy. Love is something quite different from that. True?
Yeah.
Are you really convinced, or did I just try to talk you into something there?
No, I'm, it's interesting. No, I'm, sorry, I'm thinking, today I'm okay, and today I feel okay, and I've worked really hard with practice to feel okay, and I genuinely feel good, or, you know, compared to where I had been a few days ago, and I just, I don't know, I'm having a lot of emotions come up for the person who suffers so bad, like I just...
Yes, it really is an opportunity for the two-handed recording exercise, isn't it? And to do that about once a day. Let me ask you this, Heather. Have you ever been on the receiving end of this kind of thing? Have you ever dated anybody who just wanted to throw themselves at you and be with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and obsessively focus on you and that sort of thing?
Sure. I mean, yeah.
Did you feel loved?
No.
No. Because what you got from that, I'm projecting, is that it was all about that other person. They were just,
right.
They were obsessed with themselves, and you were just an object.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just good to step back and see that. Because otherwise, the person who believes that ego, karma, conditioning story gets hooked into thinking it's true rather than this is simply an obsessive conversation in conditioned mind designed to grab somebody's attention and keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost as if when I'm in the throes of being hooked by conditioning, intellectually I know it's happening.
Yes.
But I still, it's like I cannot get my head above water, it's so interesting to see it, because I can see it and yet I'm still in it.
It's an addiction, okay?
Yeah.
So I am an alcoholic, and when all I want is a drink, I would kill my mother to get one, okay? It's all I can think about. It's all I want. It's the only thing in the world that matters. I want that drink. 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 Well, what about this? I want that drink. I want that drink. Yeah, but how about your kid? I want that drink. I want that drink. Can you see it?
I can, but yeah. Just so I'm 100% following the addiction to the voices is because it maintains,
yes,
ego identity.
That's right. It's the addiction to the karma.
Okay.
And it's a story, and it takes over, and it produces the sensations in the body at which feed the story. Then there are the emotions. There's the upset, which feeds the story. The story is obsessive. It goes on and on and on. The attention is just riveted to that whole system, and there's just no room for that poor human being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the good news to me is that you do see it, right? You see it clearly, right? Now it's a matter of practicing with it. And what the voices will say is, but it's been like this forever. It's been this way since I've been old enough to have a relationship. Yeah, that is the nature of karma. Okay, it's always been this way. That doesn't mean it's always going to be this way. It means that you have so, you know, if you are an alcoholic and we find you there in a, you know, in a stupor in your apartment with empty bottles all around you, we would do an intervention, right? We'd probably put you somewhere, right? And get you a lot of support. So that you can get out of that obsession and into a clearer place, right? Now, sadly, we don't have all of that for karma, which explains a lot about the condition that we find the world in, right?
Right.
And so
right.
That's right. Yeah, that's going to be up to you, right? So you're going to have to go at this as if you are an alcoholic, a drug addict, whatever it is, okay? But it's karma. that is the addiction. That's what, so you get clear about what that story is. You get clear about those sensations in the body and the emotions that it produces. Most of all, you get clear about the story in your head. Okay? Lots of recordings that say things like obsessive thinking about someone is not the same as loving them. Okay? Okay. When I find myself in those obsessive thought patterns, what I'm going to turn my attention to is, okay, and you have those recordings, right, that you turn your attention to. You train yourself to come back to the present. You don't indulge those obsessive thoughts.
Okay. I can do that. I mean, I've been doing it all day.
Exactly. And the thing is, Heather, you know, what that karma wants you to believe is it's never going to get any easier, but you know it will. You know it will. It trained you to this level of suffering. You can train yourself out of it. And the last thought, which I would offer you is, it's lovely to have a relationship. You know, almost all human beings want one, right? Or several. But to have that particular person, that special person, to all of those kinds of things. We're very, very programmed in that direction, right? But no relationship with anyone else can be more important than you.
Right.
Yeah. If it
Thank you. Then
you can know it's not love. You are so welcome. Let me know, okay?
I will. Thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you, thank you.
You are most welcome. Take good care of you. Good night.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Heather. That was an amazing conversation, Sherry. Great.
Yeah, I probably have said 10,000 times, but I've never heard it before, that really it is what we need. We need 12-step programs for karma, you know? We really do, to try to unhook ourselves from that addiction to ego and karma. And I guess that's when we talk about getting out of the conversation in conditioned mind. That is what we're pointing at, but wow, it takes more support than most of us can find for ourselves, right, on any given day. So it really is a heroic effort, a heroic endeavor, which most people, just for Heather and all the rest of us who are attempting this, most people don't attempt it. And so just to acknowledge that that bringing awareness practice to life is not a small thing, that we can have a lot of compassion and patience and admiration for the person who makes that kind of effort.
Yes, yes. And that's so critical that we all stay together, because we need that level of support to get through it.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. We kind of are that program, aren't we? We are the 12-step program, and here we're having a meeting. I like that. Yeah.
Yes. Hmm. And the other beautiful thing that your conversation illustrated is that our focus on process is really critical, because, you know, I listen to the whole conversation. I'm just plugging in my own content the whole way through, and it's the exact same process.
Yes, yeah, that is such a good point. That is such an important point, because, again, that system will make us believe that if our, whatever we got going, isn't just like everybody else's, well, then we're different and we're odd and we don't really fit in, we don't belong. There really is something wrong with me, because everybody else seems to be, with what we were just talking, everybody else seems to be able to have relationships and not be crazy. So why can't I? Well, we don't spend a lot of time talking about that sort of thing. If we did, we would realize that when it comes to karma, nobody is doing very well until we've done a great deal of practice on a particular area, right?
Yeah.
So that, even with that, so, you know, we're working on relationship and we kind of get to a place of, all right, I think I kind of have a handle on what this karma is, the conditioning, and I don't get hooked by those conversations anymore. And then here comes a bunch of stuff about money or about sex or about fear or about, you know, whatever else it is. And it's like, oh, why can't I just have one karma and face it, get through it, get over it, get on with my life? Doesn't seem to be the way it is.
Yes. Wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we
got somebody else
call?
For us? All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next caller. You are now.
Whoa. Whoever that is in a wind tunnel.
Okay. Not anymore. Can you hear me now?
There you are.
Hi.
Yes.
This is Pasha.
Hey, Pasha, stand still, okay?
I am standing.
All right.
I was just riding my bike and enjoying the show, and I wasn't even hoping to be picked from the queue. And
here you are. And so you had to pull over?
Yep.
All right.
I'm standing in a beautiful park by the beautiful tree and talking to you. And I don't have anything to say except life is good and there is love in life.
Isn't that wonderful?
Mm.
Isn't that a glorious thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
Oh, go ahead. I thought you were going to say, and so that's it and I'm going to get back on my bike, but sounds like something else.
No, it's the same thing. We just were talking on a group, which I'm so grateful for having and living nearby in a bike distance away, that the experience of a last assignment of writing a love letter, which it seems like I've done multiple times, I don't know how to say it in the words, but I feel like I'm becoming love without. Yes, you know what.
I do. Yes. Yes, process of love.
Yes. And I feel like I'm powerless, or it's not me doing. It's I feel like I'm taking over by the wave on which I'm just enjoying, relaxing, and and losing the object of love and losing the subject, and it's everywhere. Even in this tree, I'm standing and looking at.
And if I may, in my little obsessive way, I project. See if you agree with me on this. Mm-hmm. That the experience of that is what happens when you are not attending to a conversation in conditioned mind.
It seems like why any conversation is necessary. It's everything is here.
Yes.
I cannot take my eyes from this. I'm losing words, but
Yes.
In that
place.
Yes.
Well, yes. There's no. You look at that tree. Your heart opens. There's no reason to. You don't need to think about it. You don't need to talk about it. You don't need to have an opinion about it. You don't. It's just there. You're there. It's there. You're there. You're here. Good.
Yes.
And just dropping into that place where this is it. Here we are. And a synonym for that, I think, and I bet you agree with me, is love.
Yes. Isn't it amazing?
Yes. It's extraordinary. Astounding.
Mm.
Breathtaking.
Yes.
And so simple and so present and so available in each and every moment. All we need do is turn our attention right here. Love.
Wow. I don't know where to go from here, but I'm just here, and I'm so here.
Here in love. It's
yes.
Glorious. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
You so much.
Enjoy. All
Gosho.
Right. Take care. Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. Another fun conversation, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think we have time for at least one more caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna from Menlo Park.
Hi, Anna.
How are you?
I'm
good. I'm having one of those experiences of just being like, wow, I just got unmuted. It's really funny.
I'm here.
That's funny. Yeah. So, you know, I was just listening to the radio show, and I just had this just experience of gratitude for, like, those really tough times, you know, that I've experienced while practicing. And I think what I saw that I wanted to talk about was that even during those really tough times, I feel like I actually saw what was going on.
Uh-huh.
You know? Where it was like, you know, it's like we were just, I was hearing what was coming up for me in some of the other calls was this description of karma where it's like circling around. And as I was going through that with my own experiences, I had these very vivid recollections of the karma, you know, of you know, just like feeling like, oh my gosh, I have to, you know, kind of thing. And
yes.
Those very vivid experiences of that, are like from when I was practicing in a way, you know, because I feel like before I was practicing, I wasn't as clear as to what was going on, you know, like I didn't sit with it long enough or
yes.
something like that, you know, like I have
yes.
this experience.
Or it just seemed like that's the way it is. We kind of don't know that it's a thing.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like the way life is. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it was like this, I had this very vivid experience of like, you know, there was something that, like, I was clearly addicted to and I was trying to support myself to get some space from, and I was sitting with it, like, on the cushion, just sitting, and I was sitting, and then finally I just got ripped off the cushion and did the thing. But I remember that, you know, I remember the experience of being ripped off the cushion, do you know?
Uh-huh.
Whereas
yeah.
I think before,
yes.
I wouldn't have sat down, I would have done the thing.
Right. Yes. Yes. The point that you're making is critical, right? Because karma, conditioning, ego, would say you shouldn't be having that experience, right?
Yeah.
That when you're aware of something like that, it just starts, the conversation starts in that this shouldn't be happening. You're doing the wrong thing, right? But what you're describing is being present to it as it's happening to you. And so you see it, and you begin to see through it.
Mm-hmm.
So there I am. I'm sitting on the cushion. I want to meditate. I'm a meditator. I want to meditate. I'm meditating. And then I get ripped off the cushion to go do this thing. That's compelling, right? That's that moment where we say, wait a minute, how did that happen? What is going on here? I'm not at choice in my own life. I don't have control of my own decisions. What?
Yeah.
Now we're really practicing, huh?
Yeah. And the other part that was dropping in for me was the compassion. You know, the fact that I have that experience and like someone's talking about that and I could just angle right there. It's like, you know, like that is so hard. You know, like, not like, oh, you know, I don't have that problem. You know, it's just like, it is, you know, it's so hard.
And you're making another really critical point. You're making another really critical point for all of us. Only ego judges. Right? So ego is, oh, well, I don't understand. What is the matter with you? Why would you want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas anybody who practices says, I understand that. I know that place. That's really hard.
And it's like it's not getting rid of the judgment. It feels like the way you're describing it. It's like going to compassion.
Acknowledging, having our own experience, because you know, ego doesn't experience life.
Mm-hmm.
Ego is the illusion of being outside of life. So ego has a lot of opinions about life, but it doesn't have an experience of life. And when we start experiencing life, so now we go to what it's like to be a human being identified with an illusion of being separate from life, with an ego, with all this karma, with all this conditioning. Wow, that is a lot. And now we're going to try to wake up to all of that, see it, see through it, and make conscious, compassionate choices for being present in life.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There is cause for admiration.
Yeah. It's like I guess I'm just seeing what I'm doing. You know, like it's not that I want to push away any of these experiences, because I want to have them, because then I have that experience to draw upon. You know, being in the world of like, you know, having compassion for humans. You know, it's like. You know, not even just humans, but life.
Life, yes.
Yeah, it's like valuable. Which is
well,
the opposite of
and
what
each time you have one, each time you have one of those and you choose life, you choose presence over ego, wow. I mean, there it is. You're that much more here, more available. You're that much more helpful to the rest of us. You bring that much more kindness, and you are more joyful in the process.
Right. Yeah, it feels like what you're describing. It's like I'm turning to the experience instead of running away from it is the practice, and by doing that, I'm choosing life and not ego.
Yes. Yeah. Which turns on a light for all of us.
Yeah, because then I have that experience available to draw upon in any whatever, and builds compassion and
yes. Somebody comes along and says to you, "Gosh, Anna, you know, I'm really struggling because I have this thing that's wrong with me, and I'm doing this thing, and I feel awful, and I feel bad and guilty." And you're just, you know, you're just nodding and kind of smiling, going, "Yeah, I know, me too, yeah." And then they can say, "Really? Well, what are you doing?" And you can say, "Well, this is what I've been trying, and I've been seeing this, and you know, Now you're helpful.
Yeah. Now you're helpful. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Sherry. It's so profound. Like, I think I've heard you talk about this a lot. Of just
it's like you're like, oh yeah, and then it's like, oh yeah, and then it's like, oh yeah, you know, it's like the just getting deeper, getting it deeper and deeper, kind of the gift of practice.
Yes.
And the gift of being human, yes. You know, the gift of actually being able to experience life, the gift to myself and also the gift to everyone by actually experiencing my life.
Yes, yes. And that notion, I don't know who has this notion, but I know it exists in different places, that the human being is in this unique position between heaven and hell.
Mm.
We're in this hellish state of self-hate and karma and ego and conditioning, and what we have is the ability to transcend all of that and to be in heaven right now in this very lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing.
Right. Right. And it sounds like the transcendence is through the experience.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
So. We have to see it, we have to see what it is, and we have to make a choice against, away from the hateful and to the love.
Yeah.
That's what we're choosing in every moment, in every moment.
Yeah, 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 and it's the love is the loving of the life, you know, the loving of...
Yes.
Yeah, the idea that yes, well, thank
we
you,
could,
I love you, yeah.
Yes, we could even say... the love that is life.
Mm-hmm. The love that is life. Yep. Yep.
That's what we're choosing.
Yeah. Reminds me of that, even this, you know, like all of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I wrote a little thing the other day that I carry around with me because I like it. And it seems to me to express what we're saying. And it's just simply, everything is an opportunity to love every moment.
Mm.
So to be in love in every moment, the path to that, I suspect, is to learn to love everything.
Mm-hmm.
To realize that everything is an expression of life, and life is love.
Yeah, this is,
It's good, huh?
It's really
good.
We're lucky. It's really good. We are so lucky because there is such strong conditioning to just, I want this and not that and the other thing, and that just, it's not the fun. It's not the love.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Anna.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, thank you, Sherry. That's quite a big ending there. That's impressive.
It's good, huh? It's good. We should keep doing this. We should keep meeting like this.
And if I heard you correctly, everything is an opportunity to love every moment. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Hmm. That's big. That's great.
Isn't that? I just love it. Just makes me so happy every time I see it, every time I say it. Just makes me so happy.
Yes.
Because
there's nothing
left out. Yeah, there's nothing left out. We don't have to do that dualistic, well, should I do, is that right, is that wrong? Shouldn't I dislike that or judge that? Or No. Everything is an opportunity to love every moment. Yeah, it's good.
It's unconditional. Yeah. It's
unconditional. Yep.
Love it. Thank you again, Michael.
Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Good night.
All right. Good night.